listening to Real Talk on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
You're on Reality Check Radio, Real Talk with Rodney Hyatt. I always say this, don't I? We're truly blessed to have wonderful listeners and wonderful guests. Well, we've got a wonderful couple now. Gareth and Katie Oliver. Good morning.
Kia ora.
Morning.
Now, you run an outdoor school and it's called True in Nature.
Yes, yep. True in Nature down in Southland, based in Invercargill.
And you're both English.
Yeah, we are English. We're both English and we came here, 14 years ago? And we were only going to come for 2 years. And we've been here for 2 years. I retrained and did a different degree down in SIT. And then we started our family with one boy and we kept going and had four more. And we're yep. still here and we haven't gone home.
And you're not just four more, you had four more boys.
Yep, four boys, five of a kind.
Hit it lucky.
Yeah, boys are best. And once you have kids, you do settle, don't you?
Kind of.
Yeah, they kind of anchor you in because in reality, it's too hard to do anything else.
Yeah.
For the love of parenting, it is also quite energy consuming. And, I think we hit parenting and thought, oh, yeah, we can carry on with life and adventures and carry on doing these things. And quickly our energy got worn down and down and down and our adventures got smaller and smaller and smaller.
Speak for yourself.
For me, but for you, Gareth, you get itchy feet very quickly and need to get out.
Crave the adventure.
Crave adventure, don't you?
And then the shifting schools and then their friends. We left Christchurch and my oldest girl didn't want to leave because she liked a tree that was at our property. And she didn't want to leave the tree. And it became such a thing. Oh, I just don't want to leave my tree.
Aww.
And of course, once they get into a new place, they get new friends and they're away. But it's very, very, very tough. And of course, the other thing that with kids is you just accumulate so much stuff. You can't be a lightweight camper with, five boys, right?
No, how many kayaks we got now?
Yeah, we started off with a tent and then we had a pop top and then we had the pop top with, what was it, four boys. And I was just like, no, that's it. I can't. We can't squeeze six of us into this tiny pop top. And then, we've invested in a rather large, luxurious caravan, but that was under duress, but it's turned out to be quite an investment. So we're at luxurious stage at the moment, but you never know, we might go back to tenting.
And you were both teachers?
Yeah. Well, 22 years, I think, was teaching since I was out of university, yeah.
So you trained to be a teacher in the UK?
Yeah. I taught about 10 or 12 years there. Probably about 10 years. And then we've always travelled and we just one day thought, oh, let's go to Canada or New Zealand. And Canada had a 4-year visa sort of waiting list and New Zealand had a few months. So New Zealand got the nod and off we went. Yeah, it's great.
It seems odd to land in Southland.
Hmm. Why is that? What have you got against Southland?
I've got nothing. I love Southland. But like if you think of your typical immigrant, they're North Hamilton or North, and they'll come to places where there's a shortage of labour like Christchurch or Queenstown. But people don't think of Southland. I think Southland's amazing.
Yeah.
And personally, but it is a little cool.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we ended up here by mistake, didn't we? We started off in Auckland teaching, you know, relief teaching up there, and then did the traveller thing and converted a wee camper and travelled around for a few months. And then we ended up in Queenstown and watching the Queenstown Sevens, and you came across the SIT stand and you came running over. You're like, Kate, how about doing a degree in massage therapy? So Invercargill, I don't think we'd even heard of Invercargill. We definitely weren't planning to go traveling to Invercargill. So we detoured down here. And for the 3 days that we were here, the weather was amazing.
And that's so the last time it was good.
Great 3 days.
And yeah, it was really, really hot. And we were you know, we'd seen all the mountain bike tracks and running tracks and the velodrome. And we were like, yeah, we could do 3 years here. This has got everything we need, you know, running, biking, some adventures. And so I signed up for a degree in massage therapy and had a little bit of a retrack. And that's what led us here. And then we started the family. And it actually is an amazing place to bring up a family. It's very easygoing, cheap, you know, well, cheap. I don't know that you can call living cheap anymore.
But outdoorsy,
it's, yeah, it? Yeah, it's just easy going.
Good coast.
You've got a wonderful nursery down there, Dykes.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And that sort of dates from 1909. And it's like you go there and you're dealing with, I think, the great grandson of the guy that started it. And they live next door to the nursery. And you go there and it's so wonderful because you sort of load your trailer up and they say, oh, I'll fix this up when you come back. And you're thinking, where?
Oh, nice.
In New Zealand, do they do that except Invercargill? It is a wonderful spot, wonderful people. Now, why did you train? Had you always wanted to be a masseuse?
Massage therapist. No, well,
different? I apologize. I apologize because there might be an unfortunate connotation. Yeah, massage therapist.
Massage therapist, they are therapeutic massage. It's very different. It's, you know, it's quite up there with the skill level and knowledge. And at school, I was always wanting to either do physiotherapy or PE teaching. And so, to be honest, I didn't get the grades good enough to do physiotherapy. And so that was my decision made and went into PE teaching, which was probably more my natural calling is to teach. And that's where it started. And then got a chance to do massage therapy and loved the biology and the health. And so that sent us off on an alternative or complementary health modality to maintaining our family's health as well. It's been a great course to do.
And when you think of people coming from England, we don't typically thinking of them, apart from Bear Grylls, of being outdoorsy people, but you were always outdoorsy people in nature?
Yeah, it's just developed, isn't it? Yeah. We always went tramping and travelling. I think it's through our travelling, tramped in the Himalayas and Europe, you know, the Alps, and did a year in Australia, and we did a lot of tramping there, Tasmania.
Wow.
Yeah, it's just grown, really.
Now, we're going to get onto this true nature because it's fascinating. But first of all, you were teaching away, Gareth, and then what happened?
Well, the the COVID mandate happened, and I was quite happy, and then it all had to finish quite abruptly, really. I just didn't think the vaccine was for me, and that didn't agree with what the school believed. So that sadly ended on.
I'm fascinated, right? Because the whole thing is a mystery to me. Just tell us the experience. Was it like, I mean, it must have been a shock. Because you're teaching away, you're a valued member of the team. And you say, yeah, you guys knock yourselves out, have the jab. But this thing seems a bit hairy to me. And I'd just like to say no. And they say bye-bye.
Pretty much, yeah.
I mean, how did that play out in your mind?
Oh, it's horrendous.
Horrendous. That's the right word. Horrendous.
Yeah. That was like a nightmare, really. Yeah. Yeah. Katie said in the October holidays when it was all the, you know, all the messages from the government was coming out, she said, teachers will be next. And I said, no, they won't do that. I think they'd done the border workers, did a mandate, and that was bad enough. And then she said, our teachers will come. I said, no, they wouldn't do that. Why would they do that? And by, I think, a few weeks in, yeah, it all came to fruition and teachers were being mandated. So I was just, the stress was huge, you know, having to feed seven people. And,
Were you both in agreement about not taking the jab?
Yeah, yeah.
Because that makes a difference, doesn't it?
Yeah, just, we felt we were healthy enough. Young, you know, healthy enough. Yeah,
that's crazy, right? And
yeah, crazy.
I imagine that all your colleagues at the school were saying, Gareth, just get the bloody jab. What's wrong with you?
No, it's weird. It's like there's this wall of silence where no one really discussed it. And it did end up like, yeah, it was a horrible, it felt like a horrible environment. I don't know. I just carried on with my job for those few weeks that I could. I did end up going on stress leave because I couldn't sleep. And, you know, I was, you know, stressing in the job. So trying to do the job whilst being stressed is hard. You know, caring for children at high school and you know, you see all the channels of keeping your job disappears and you ring up a lawyer, employment lawyer, and she just tells you, oh, sorry, if they're following the process, the right process, there's nothing you can do. And, you know, I used Voices for Freedom guidelines and stuff, but nothing worked in keeping your job. And after three meetings with the principal, it finished and you basically had to clear your cupboards and you're off. Yeah, so, yeah, no, I wouldn't say other staff members were advising those things, but like I said, I did go on stress leave because it was too much. Yeah.
Let's move on because I can see it's a horrible experience that we've all been through.
Yeah, it's reopening the trauma.
It is, and I apologize, but it's quite good in this sense for our listeners because everyone sort of has their trauma story. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's often when you look back on it, you realize just how horrific it was. Because at the time, it's sort of like, you can't comprehend it, that it's happening. And then you start talking about it, or you're hearing other people talk about it, and you think, yeah, that's right. Jeepers, that was just so, so awful. But here you are doing something amazing as a consequence.
Yeah, doing something, something that we really enjoy.
And you had this in the back of your mind for some time, this truer nature concept.
Yeah, well, we always, for probably two or three years back, you know, it's popularized in England and it's always been popular in Scandinavian countries and, you know, loving the outdoors and doing a lot of school camps anyway. Just had this idea, wouldn't it be great if children could just learn in nature and learn about nature, but, you know, just be themselves in nature. And I did take it to a principal. Not the one who dismissed me, but the previous principal did take it to him and said, oh, wouldn't it be great if we could take children who are struggling at school and do a forest type education, like maybe one day a week or something. But he didn't seem too keen at that point. So when we got this vision, we got this vision and I was kind of, you know, had a pretty rough year after the dismissal of, you know, the mandate and the dismissal. And actually went to a retreat, a visioning retreat with a couple, two friends had organised. It's through a thing called nonviolent communication and a lot of empathy and deep thinking over the weekend. Anyway, came out with a vision that wanted to take people into the environment and nature and give them access to the nature, to nature. And yeah, so got this this clear vision, and Katie's like, yeah, let's just go for it. So
isn't that great? And to have the support of your wife, how wonderful.
Oh, Kate, she's the one who's driven it, really. I think you're the driver, aren't you? You've driven the vision.
Oh, I guess probably I'm the background.
She's the boss.
I'm the background. And Gareth does what he's best at, which is the hands-on delivery, doing the exciting bushcraft stuff and getting the kids engaged. And I just get the kids there, get him there, get us there. Because we all go as a family, like one day a week we're out. It's us two leading the program, and our five boys come with us because we homeschool them or home educate them. And so it's like a whole family delivering this program for between 12 and 15 other children, and away we go. And yeah, so Gareth's not so keen on the computer side of things. So
yeah.
I tend to take up the slack of, you know, doing the whole social media and the emailing and the marketing and learning all these new things, which is I'm quite stoked with what I've learned over the last year and a half to get it up and going. But no, it's been quite amazing. You know, I think seeing Gareth come back from that retreat, it was, for him, it was a really, it was a turning point, because he was able to release a huge part of the emotion that was built up over the last year and a half, that you know, the stress that he went through, the losing of the job, the, you know, and with that, it's your role as a person in the family. Like, he was no longer the provider of the family, no longer the protector, no longer the person that was able to go to work every day and come home and you know, so that whole role had gone, and for a good year and a half, he was just completely lost. And it was, you know, you've said lots of times, I'm a shadow of a man of what I used to be. But so being able to release those emotions at this retreat, like, you can't move on until you've had that experience.
Well, good for you.
You know, you actually can't move on and do something different until you've had that opportunity to feel heard, to feel held, and release. And then came the momentum and the motivation to do something different for you, eh?
Yeah. All thanks to Sally.
Yeah.
Sally Urinder,
yeah,
who Peace Talks in Dunedin. Lovely way about running the weekend.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just had this big grief to release, and through their empathetic talk and the way they run the weekend is just able to do that at times. Yeah.
Very easy. I mean, us men keep it in too, don't we?
Yeah. Yeah. I think, probably more so than females, I'd guess, just generalising. But
well, we feel the need to. We've got to be the one that's the rock. And when we're not the rock, we don't know what to do. Tell me, I'm a kid. I've been signed up to your program for a day. Can I do a day, or do I do a week, or do I do a term? What do I do?
Well, for the termly program, they sign up for the term, and then we run holiday programs where they can come for a day or sign up for 3 days. It's pretty.
And if I sign up for the term, is it every day or 1 day a week?
So it's 1 day a week. In Invercargill, we run it on a Friday, and we have a Gore group, so a group over at Gore.
Yes.
Just finished this week, and that's been every Wednesday. So they do, their same group comes for 6 to 8 weeks. And
what would they do the first day?
Our first day would be a lot of icebreaker games.
Yes.
Getting to know each other, getting, you know, fun sort of nature-based games, lots of tag. Yeah. Lots of tag style games. Always a bit of a wonder because we're called the Wild Wanderers. Yeah. And always go
boys and girls.
Yeah, boys and girls.
Age range?
Pardon?
Age range?
7 to 12.
Okay.
We have had a few 6 year olds. I will say it's boy heavy. I don't know why, but they'd come along, do lots of icebreakers, always go on a wild wonder.
And what's a wild wonder?
Oh, so a wild wonder could be, for example, where we go in Invercargill, it's a lovely native bush, and we'd go off the track and do a sort of a go along the boundaries through the bush, up hills, down sand dunes. It's a beautiful spot we use here, but we do tend to change venues each week.
Yes, so you go bushwhacking.
Bushwhacking maybe 1 week, and then another week we'll do a beach day. They love the beach, just exploring and finding pieces of shark on the beach, or rotting bird carcasses that they just get their archaeological skills going. And we just sort of base it on the weather as well down here, very much so on the weather. Yeah, just.
And the profile of the kids that are doing this, are they kids whose parents just say, oh, I want Sammy to have a bit of nature? Or are they kids that are struggling a little bit at school and need to be energized a bit? What's the profile of these kids?
Oh, a whole variety, really. The first year we had, so this is the second year we've been running. First year we started off with mostly homeschool families, mm-hmm. and they just wanted their children, you know, learning with others in nature. And then it's sort of now we're mostly children coming out of schools.
Wow.
Yeah, so, and it could be a whole variety of reasons. Parents wanting their children to just be outdoors more, or recently in the current group we've got, it's schools contacting us now.
No way.
To see that children have these needs in the classroom that aren't necessarily being met, and you know this environment doesn't suit them, and they're asking us, could they come on our program? And we're obviously accepting of everyone, and so it's a whole variety of profiles.
Well, that bodes well for the future of your enterprise if schools are approaching you, because that's amazing to me, and says something about what you're doing.
Nice that schools are recognizing, you know, that the school environment doesn't get all children. It's great to see.
Yeah, it's very exciting. It's quite interesting. It's still very mixed. Some principals are not supportive of parents taking their children out one day a week for various different reasons. But we've recently, we're working with a cohort of Northern Southland schools. We've got a coordinator there who's managed to access quite a lot of funding. And what they're doing is for around 8 schools up in that area, they're going to bring a cohort of, say, 15 children for a 5-week program, and then more of the
attendance.
Yeah, attendance. So they're targeting attendance to see if they can get them
more engaged.
These are kids that aren't coming to school that much.
Not coming to school, disengaged in their learning, perhaps a few behaviour issues as well. Mm. And yeah, we're really excited part of that.
And what's the legal basis for a parent saying, I want to send my kids off to this bush school one day a week? What's the legal basis? Like, can I just let the school know? Or can they say, no, it's compulsory? You can't just pick and choose the days. How does all that work? Is it just up to the school policy?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question, Rodney, because like I mentioned earlier, some parents face a big fat no, which is really hard. And I guess the barriers in place here for principals are that, you know, the funding, et cetera, is based on attendance and numbers. Mm. And so the principals do have a child's absence, whether it's an absence or they're attending education in another way. So that discretion is down to the principal and the board of trustees. So we have a variety of different attitudes with parents. Some are very they're really worried about what the principals and the school say, and then they're very tentative and don't want to rock the boat and tend to do what they're told. And other parents are just like, no, this is what my child needs. They need to be out of the classroom. They're not able to have all their needs met in the classroom. And I want, they're hands-on learners, they're kinesthetic learners, and want to really allow their potential to come out. And so they're just like, no, we're taking them out. And they make that move. So, yeah, variety. But ultimately, it does come down to responsibility of the parents to have that discussion and negotiate with principals themselves, really.
And tell me, what do you notice the effect on the children of the program?
Oh,
wow, it's great. Like, for example, it's quite interesting. We have a lot of children that come in on their forms, with lots of all the Ds, the ADHD, the ADD, the OCD, the ODDs, and a big long list. So
have our hands full here.
Yeah. So we tend to, in a way, ignore them, and take the child as we see them, as they present themselves to us in the environments. We're not coming in with that bias and judgment, but also having it in the back of our mind of, because we're working with knives, we're working with fire, we're out and about, and you don't just have help on hand. We're not isolated, but we're further away from help. But we do notice that all those D's, if you want to say, kind of are really reduced or minimized or even disappear in quite a few of those children.
I can imagine that.
Yeah,
I imagine if you're a bit anxious, or you're a bit hyperactive, or you've got to keep moving, or you just can't sit still, can't concentrate, whatever, classrooms just aggravates those tendencies. And it's day after day, and it gets worse and worse. And then you have a day outside free.
Yeah, you've nailed it on the head, Rodney. You've nailed it on the head. Yep. The environment's everything. And I had a great conversation with a chiropractor this week who works a lot with ADHD children and their families. And the biggest takeaway for me is that those children are so overstimulated. And they neurologically can't cope with it, and or they might be oversensitive. And so you remove them from that environment and put them into a much calming environment, out in nature. As soon as we all step out in nature, we are much calmer, aren't we? Even for ourselves, you just get outside, you're like, and you get on the beach or in the forest, and you're like, everything settles and calms. And that's what we notice. Like, we've got a couple of kids that are real trouble in their classrooms. But I can't imagine. I just can't imagine them behaving that way, because they're so calm and placid.
We haven't seen them in the classroom, but got a couple, boys come into the Wednesday or Friday group, and their parents are taking them off their ADHD medication, and because they're going to be in nature. So because, they're working with knives and fire, but they've got that belief in the child that they're going to be okay, because they haven't got four walls to bounce off,
That must be so rewarding.
Oh, it's amazing. Like, to hear feedback from a mum who's, say, oh, I've not seen him so happy. I'd imagine it'd be really tough. I'll give you an example. On Wednesday, we finished the program at the 6 or 8 weeks with a ceremony, and they receive a piece of survival gear. to help them, you know, do improve their skills. Or and one of the mums said, "Oh, I haven't seen him so happy after he'd received his knife, you know, his first knife." And just hearing that, oh, we're not off, we're not giving him his medication on that day, is like brilliant. You know, you wouldn't notice any different.
And what about the feedback from the schools? Because I can imagine oftentimes for a kid, just that one day a week is enough and they can go back into the classroom and cope.
Yeah, we well, we've had some referrals from schools and they've wanted to continue the program for the children next term. So, I mean, that's good feedback. It might also give the classroom teacher a good rest.
Yes. And tell me, and isn't that wonderful? Like, my 13-year-old wanted a knife for a birthday. And I had a very treasured 25-year-old Spyderco Endura, which I always had in my pocket. And I gave it to her. And I said, this is, apart from having to get on an airplane, and I've often had to hand it to a shop in an airport and get it on my way back because I forget, I'd carry that knife everywhere. And so I gave it to her, and she just loves it. And we played with knives as kids, right? But these days, they're not trusted to have a pocket knife or a bush knife. They're not trusted to light a fire. And, you know, everyone's saying, oh, don't do that, you could hurt yourself. That's gone way over the top.
Yeah.
And it's removed from children that personal responsibility of learning to look after yourself and actually skinning your knee and knowing not to do that.
Yeah.
And that would be a big part of your program, wouldn't it? You skin your knee.
Yeah, a big part of, you know, I guess through what we offer, we're really focusing on those life skills. And part of one of those really important ones is self-management and risk assessment. You know, you'd much rather your child experimenting and seeing how far they can climb up the tree than jumping in a car and seeing how fast they can drive it.
That's right.
When they're 15. And so a lot of parents don't realize that when they're stopping their child from taking risks, from climbing the wall or throwing themselves off the sand dunes and running down and working with knives, that they're actually inhibiting their children not learning to feel capable within themselves. Then they're not able to grow into their body, into their physicality, into their mental capacity, because we're squashing them. We're trying to keep them safe. But by doing that, we are then inviting them to find out about it in ways that are not helpful, through the drugs, through driving, through the drinking, through the ram raiding of the shops on the high street and the gang kind of culture and group culture. So, yeah, I think risk taking and risk management is really important. So, although like we are guardians of their safety, unless there's something that you do have to intervene in very quickly, it's always like thrown back to them. Like, is this safe? What do you need to consider? How do you need to make yourself and others safe? And you're putting back the thinking skills onto them. So they're taking in their surroundings and starting to make those choices for themselves. And then you see it you see it, they start managing themselves, don't they? And they start looking after each other and telling each
Isn't
other,
that great?
You know? Yeah.
Tell me, it must be you have this great fear in New Zealand, right? Because there'll be a tragic accident with a kid on a camp or on an excursion. And there's a big inquiry and, you know, oh, they didn't do this and they didn't do that. And, you know, stuff happens. And you have a sense that opportunities for kids because of this are being circumscribed. because yep. the school says, well, it's just too risky to go on a camp. You know, it's just too yep. risky to do this. It's just too risky to do that.
And we have seen that as teachers over the last couple of decades, like those opportunities are getting less and less. You know, the camps are getting yes. less, the day trips are getting less because the paperwork and the risk assessment involved is so huge that it becomes such a mission to be able to do that, to do anything that...
And all that energy. Safety stuff has a good purpose.
Oh, yeah, it has a place, definitely.
But the trouble yeah. is, it's like you understand why, as a parent, you've got to have a police check by the kids somewhere up.
Yeah.
But you're thinking, oh, not another bloody police check just to take the kid to the soccer or whatever it is, right? You know, it's just, yeah. and it's insulting. And then I imagine you're on the edge of this a lot.
Yeah, I when we first started, it's kind of like, oh, you know, that feeling within you of having to cover your backs just in case.
Well, it's not, but it's also safeguard. Yeah, it does definitely have its place, like safeguarding the children, you know, because in the end of the day, no one wants an accident in the outdoors or when you're caring for children. That's they're in your care. You're looking after them. So, you know, when the knives are out, it's all eyes, all hands on deck. And it's like
very vigilant, aren't you? Absolutely vigilant. And you've,
sometimes that's when you step in and tell them, right, no, you're not going into that bush with that knife on your belt. Yeah.
I've been living a bit wilder with my kids since last year, and it's amazing to me now because they literally disappear and come back when they're hungry.
Oh, that's great.
And they come back and they'll be dirt from head to toe, God knows how, right?
Brilliant.
There'll be two skinned knees and a big bruise from something. And it's how we used to grow up. And you realize that's quite hard to do now. And even with us, I said, I reckon you could get up that tree. And off they go, they're up the tree. And my poor wife just about had a heart attack. And she said, you know, they could fall. And I said, well, I suppose. But kids seldom fall out of a tree in my experience. But, you know, they went way up and they were exhilarated for days and days and days because they kept going up this tree. And it's like you say, they're learning courage, limits, fear, self-responsibility, and they didn't fall, you know. It's like so that's what we do. I haven't got a lot of parents get their little kids motorbikes, and I've resisted getting my son a motorbike because I just think he's bad enough on a push bike. And so I haven't done that because I think it's sort of like a level that their brains can't assess risk. Whereas like climbing a tree, he innately gets a sense of, oh, that would be a bit tricky, I'll just stay here. But I can imagine him getting in a motorbike, opening it up, and then thinking about how you stop it when he's
things
to
happen so fast on a motorbike.
Because push bikes and that, you're under your own steam and strength and power, and so it's all relative, isn't it?
Yeah
With and the tree climbing, that's an interesting one. It's like, even for me, seeing them go higher and higher makes me nervous.
Yes.
We're always telling them, always, you know, explaining, make sure you're checking the branch can take your weight, make sure
got
the
two
branches
bits to hang on,
as thick as your wrist. So we're giving them all the safety points and also saying to them, are you still feeling comfortable there, you know?
Yeah.
Because sometimes they can be that group sort of peer pressure maybe to go higher. Yeah. So it's always checking in with their comfort levels and how they feel.
And there is a difference between because I work with the younger ones as well. I do a bush play group, and I also have a
and when you're saying young, in... these are like really young, right?
Yeah, yeah, like, you know, the 1 to 5 year olds.
How and wonderful.
Yeah, yeah. And so I work with the families. And so, you know, if children haven't been allowed to move in their own natural ways, and I'll just give you a quick example, is if we, as little toddlers, you know, the 1 year old stage and the 2 year old, we're always lifting them up onto the chair or carrying them down the stairs or not letting them climb out the door and work out their way to get down the steps and up the steps, and you've lifted them here and there, they're not learning. Again, they're not learning their capabilities, and so their balance is their balance and coordination develops, or is very different to those children that have been allowed to do that. And you can see that very, very clearly with even a, you know, 1 year old, 2 year olds, when they start moving, you notice a difference. And so they have a much higher regulation of their capabilities. They know their limits, whereas some of those that you know, have been lifted or lifted down from the bench or lifted down, or they don't have that, and they kind of they're the ones that tend to jump and then think about it later, and they're the ones that tend to hurt themselves. So it does start from a very, very early age, which is...
You're on Reality Check Radio. It's Real Talk with Rodney Hyde. We're having a great conversation with Gareth and Katie Oliver. Gosh, amazing parents, but what an amazing thing they're doing. And their school, I guess you'd call it a school, a bush school. Is that what you'd call it?
We never wanted to use the word school, but we've succumbed to calling it bush school because that's what people know. Yeah, what people know.
It's called True in Nature. Tell us about the name, True in Nature.
So True in Nature came about really, you know, with the last few years, you kind of start to perceive things in different ways, including education and health and everything around it, and it really became clear how far away the systems take us from our true selves. And so True in Nature for us is really bringing a child back to their true selves, so they can just be themselves in nature, get back in and start fulfilling their potential in the way that they know, because they know exactly what they need to learn. They know how to do it. And we are just guardians and facilitators to get the best out of them, rather than trying to get them to fit into this box and have them to tick these things off, because that's what's been, you know, prescribed, I guess, for in
it's
school.
It's extraordinary. It's extraordinary how much we are mollycoddled and babyfied, and that it continues into our 20s. And so we all have had that experience of meeting a 25-year-old, and it's like they're kids, right, in terms of what they've done and their experience. And I've taken to really enjoying historical books of history. And Lord Nelson... I still can't get over this, but this was just typical. His father was a minister, and Lord Nelson wanted to go to sea, so it was organised. And the dad took him by stagecoach to London, but then couldn't take him to the next stage. And this 12-year-old gets on the stagecoach on his own, gets to, I think, Southampton, where the ships were, wandered around totally lost, got found. Oh, yeah, we know the ship. Someone's rowing out to it. And out they row him. He gets on the ship. 12-year-old boy amongst his men. The captain that was a friend of a friend of a friend wasn't there. They said, he'll be here in a couple of days. Captain turns up and off they go to sea. And that was... That was typical. And there were 12-year-old boys, of course, at, you know, the Battle of Trafalgar.
Yeah.
And, we, and, And my father was off on his own, driving six horses at 14. You know, and it's like, we got this crazy thing of kids now.
We don't see them as capable.
No, and even right
you know,
from
like
that,
we kind right, of treat,
right from that stage of what you're saying, it's what picked my interest, is right from the stage we pick them up, we put them there. If you had 14 kids and you were running a farm and a household and pumping the water and lighting the coal range, you wouldn't be picking your kids up, right?
I know. I think we generally see, in general, we see our children as something we have to teach them everything. You know, yeah. we put them into, I had a conversation just the other day with a grandma, and she's like, her daughter's just returning back to work, and so the five-month-old's going into care. And part of that is because, you know, childcare provides all these opportunities that they can't provide at home, like doing the baking and all these things. And so as a society, we don't feel like we are enough as and we can offer enough. It's got to be handed over to the professionals. The professionals know what they're doing and they can offer more for my child. But we need to come back and know that we are just enough for our child, and our child knows what to do. They don't need to be taught how to walk, how to talk, how to move. Yeah, and so I guess the system that we're in and the society we're in, we really feel as though it's something that we have to do to them and for them all the time. Whereas what I'd love to see happen is if we could flip it and allow the children to guide us into how to support them, to bring the best out in them. And I think that's one benefit of just learning in a different environment, is that they are allowed to engage and follow their curiosities and their interests. So, you know, for example, we will have some very engineering brains in the groups, and they're always building something or constructing something. And then there'll be other children that are really curious with, you know, nature and the insects and the trees, and that's more of their curiosity, or so they, you know, they if they're allowed to, they will follow what they need to be able to do to develop and grow their strengths and their passions and their curiosities. And that's what's really important to me, is if we can nurture this within our children, for them to know what their passions are, know what their strengths are, know what they love, and then for them to follow that on into their adult life. And can you imagine a world like where we're all just doing what we love to do and what we're good at, instead of being made to feel like we have to be good at maths and geography and history and art and music and be graded in all those things, and then feel like we're not good in those things because we get crap grades, and then our self-esteem takes a hit, and then we're like, oh, I don't want to go for that job. I don't want to try and open up that business because I'm not good enough.
It must be wonderful for your five boys, A, to be homeschooled with wonderful parents, but also to go along with you on these days with the other kids. It must be just wonderful.
Oh, in theory. I'm not going to lie.
Oh, I'm sorry. Like,
I'm not going to burst the bubble of illusion.
There's always someone grumpy in the morning.
Definitely.
When you've got five.
Yeah. There's always the resistance to face, that's for sure. You know, like generally when they're there, they're pretty good, aren't they? And they've got some good mates and they crack on with it. But my gosh, like we face the challenges, and trying to find boots and socks to get out on time is a freaking nightmare. every time.
Freaking nightmare. I got
but it is.
It's just life.
And it amazes me. It's like we've created this thing. We're doing something that we love. You know, we love being outdoors, love activity. We're getting to take our children with us. People are paying us to bring their children to us. It's like, wow.
I know.
That's amazing.
And you're living in Southland. How could it get better?
Oh, a bit more sunshine, but how could it get better?
When you get successful, really successful, you'll be able to in a year or two, have a few weeks in Northland, maybe do a bush school up there. And then I reckon if you could get to a point where you could have a couple of weeks in winter somewhere sunny, the winter wouldn't feel so bad.
That sounds good, doesn't it?
That sounds
do our holiday programs and then head off overseas for a couple of weeks break.
Yeah.
Head to Winton or something. It's sunnier there.
Head to Winton.
just get to that. Obviously, you plan to do this forever and ever.
Oh, we'd love to take it on the road, I think. It would be really nice to travel and do it on the road. Yeah. When you say on the road,
around New Zealand or further afield?
Yeah, around New Zealand for now. That's as far as my brain can go. Yeah, it'd be nice just to jump in the caravan, do little holiday programs at different places or weekend visits here and there. It would be nice to take it further afield. And that would kind of satisfy our buzz for traveling and adventure combined with gifting these opportunities for others too.
There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Wonderful couple, Gareth and Katie Oliver. Come to New Zealand, didn't expect to stay, didn't expect to end up in Southland, didn't expect to lose their job because they wouldn't take state-mandated medication. And out of it have built a wonderful life, or building a wonderful life and a wonderful service, helping kids. And especially the square pegs, I would guess, in the round holes, that sitting in a classroom, day in and day out, not quite their thing. They need a break. Well, they can get it now and they can go and learn some valuable skills and learn about nature. At the True in Nature, well, I'll call it what it is, a bush school. If you've enjoyed this, send us a text, 2057. Email us at inbox@rallycheck.radio. You're on Real Talk with Rodney Hyde. Thank you. I keep saying this. We're truly blessed, are we not, with the wonderful guests.
Are you loving what you're hearing? Well, the establishment hates it. And right now, they're conjuring up new ways to try and censor RCR. To ensure you never miss a beat of the hard-hitting news you've come to know and love, make sure you're on the RCR mailing list. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.